There have been very few detailed studies of such patients, but Timothy Griffiths, Jason Warren et al. Have described how one man, a 52-year-old radio announcer who suffered a dominant hemisphere stroke with a transient aphasia and hemiplegia, was left with a persistent alteration in auditory experience. He was in the habit of listening to classical music and had derived particular pleasure from listening to Rachmaninoff preludes. He experienced an intense, altered state of transformation when he did this. This emotional response to the music was lost following the stroke and remained absent during the period of testing between 12 and 18 months after the stroke. During this period, he was able to enjoy other aspects of life and reported no biological features of depression. He had noticed no change in his hearing and was still able to identify speech, music, and environmental sounds correctly. Isabel Peretz and her colleagues have been especially concerned with amusia, the loss or congenital lack of ability to make structural judgments about music. They were astounded to find in the early 1990s that some of their subjects, rendered virtually amusic by brain injuries, were nonetheless still able to enjoy music and to make emotional judgments about it. One such patient, listening to Albinoni's Adagio from her own record collection, first said that she had never heard the piece before, then commented that it makes me feel sad and the feeling makes me think of Albinoni's Adagio. Another patient of Peretz's was I.R., a 40-year-old woman who had mirror aneurysms of both middle cerebral arteries. When these were clipped, the surgery caused extensive infarctions in both temporal lobes. After this, she lost the ability to recognize previously familiar melodies and even to discriminate musical sequences. Despite these gross deficits, Peretz and Gagnon wrote in 1999, I.R. claimed that she could still enjoy music. Detailed testing supported her claim. These and other cases led Peretz to think that there must be a particular functional architecture underlying the emotional interpretation of music, an architecture which could be spared even if amusia was present. The details of this functional architecture are being slowly worked out, partly through the study of patients who have had strokes, brain injuries, or surgical removal of parts of the temporal lobes, and partly through functional brain imaging of subjects as they experience intense emotional arousal while listening to music. This has been a focus of work by Robert Zatori and his lab. See, for example, Blood and Zatori's 2001 paper. Both lines of research have implicated a very extensive network involving both cortical and subcortical regions as the basis for emotional responses to music. And the fact that one may have not only a selective loss of musical emotion, but an equally selective sudden musicophilia, as described in chapters 1 and 27, implies that the emotional response to music may have a very specific physiological basis of its own, one which is distinct from that of emotional responsiveness in general. Indifference to music's emotional power may occur in people with Asperger's syndrome. Temple Grandin, the brilliant autistic scientist I described in An Anthropologist on Mars, is fascinated by musical form and is particularly attracted to music by Bach. She told me once that she had been to a concert of Bach's 2- and 3-part inventions. I asked if she had enjoyed them. They were very ingenious, she replied, adding that she wondered whether Bach would have been up to 4- or 5-part inventions. But did you enjoy them? I asked again, and she gave me the same answer, saying that she got intellectual pleasure from Bach, but nothing more. Music, she said, did not move her to the depth, as it apparently could, she had observed, with other people. There is some evidence, indeed, that those medial parts of the brain involved with experiencing deep emotions, the amygdala in particular, may be poorly developed in people with Asperger's. It was not only music that failed to move Temple deeply. She seemed to experience a certain flattening of emotion generally. Once, when we were driving together in the mountains and I remarked on them with awe and wonder, Temple said she did not know what I meant. The mountains are pretty, she said, but they don't give me a special feeling. And yet, though Temple seemed indifferent to music, this is not true of all people with autism. Indeed, I formed an opposite impression during the 1970s, when I worked with a group of young people with severe autism. It was only through music that I could establish any contact with the most inaccessible among them, and I felt this so strongly that I brought my own piano, an old second-hand upright at the time, into the hospital ward where I worked. It seemed to act as a sort of magnet for some of these non-verbal youngsters.